Good morning. This morning we have two cases set on. The first case is Brown County versus Brown County Taxpayers Association. Counsel, could you make your appearances, please? Great. Good morning. This morning we also have two schools here with us. Central Wisconsin Christian School from Waupun. Could you stand up so we can acknowledge you?
Great. Big group.
Yeah, nice. Welcome. It's nice to have you here today. Go ahead and have a seat. And then Dr. Howard Fuller Collegiate Academy from Milwaukee, if you could rise. Great. It's nice to have you here as well. Good morning. Okay, with that, as I understand it, the lineup for the Brown County case this morning is 25 minutes for Mr. Lococo, 30 minutes for Mr. Phillips, followed by 5 minutes for Mr. Lococo, correct? All right, then let's proceed.
Madam Chief Justice, and may it please this court, by law, a Wisconsin county may impose a sales and use tax only for the purpose of directly reducing its property tax levy. Brown County's sales tax violates this requirement for two reasons. First, rather than using the sales tax revenue it's collecting to directly reduce the property taxes paid by its citizens, the county is instead funding a multi-million dollar wish list of new spending items. The county says that without the sales tax, it would have funded these new projects with increased property taxes, and therefore that it has directly reduced them. But the avoidance of a hypothetical increase is not the same as a reduction, much less a direct reduction. Second, even if avoiding a property tax increase that otherwise would have occurred were sufficient under the terms of the statute, the county's hypothetical property tax increase could not have occurred. Levy limits would have prevented the county from raising property taxes by $147 million in new spending. So in other words, this court could agree with the county in its interpretation of the statute, or it could assume without deciding that the county is correct, and its tax would still be illegal. I'll discuss each of these two defects in the county's sales tax in turn.
Counsel?
Go ahead.
The Department of Revenue amicus brief indicates that the collection is not illegal, but what is done with the money is illegal. They emphasize how it is spent. So could you respond to that, please?
Certainly, Your Honor. So as you note, since the beginning of this litigation, the Department of Revenue has not taken a position on whether Brown County's tax is illegal, and it has asked for additional briefing on the question of remedy. And the remedy that it has suggested is that the tax not be enjoined, but instead collected, and the county, if the tax is found to be illegal, be required to direct the sales tax revenue toward actual direct property tax reduction.
Is that really what they're saying? I'm going to try to pull it up quickly, but my recollection is that they said that the issue really was how, and that there's really no valid assertion or pathway to an injunction on the collection. Correct me, and I'm sure you will.
No, Your Honor, that's correct. That's their position, is that the tax should not be enjoined, but that the county should be required to use the proceeds as the statute requires. In other words, towards direct property tax reduction. It could still be collected. It could still be remitted to the Department of Revenue. The Department of Revenue would still, from general appropriations, direct funding back towards the county as the statutes require. But then the county would have to use that money towards directly reducing its property tax levy. Now, we would ask with respect...
Depending on how, and they don't take a position on how it is done directly. Am I correct on that?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
And then that would occur if the tax were found to be illegal. Now, our position is DOR has asked for remedy, additional briefing on remedy. No party has objected to that. I think it's fair to say the parties have been proceeding on that assumption. So while this court certainly could rule, of course, on the question of remedy itself if it wished to, I think the ordinary course would be to remand the case back to the circuit court on the question of remedy.
To follow up on Justice Bradley's, Analyst Bradley's question, you say that the issue is with the fact that it's not direct, and that, but the question I have for you is, how is it ever direct when it comes to property taxes? No check can be cut to give back to members of the community, right? I mean, DOR collects the dollars, and there really is no way for a dollar-to-dollar offset to actually take place. So how would you answer that question?
So the word direct, as we noted in our brief, means without intervening steps. And so in order for the reduction to be direct, as sales tax increase, property tax would decrease. But what the county's interpretation requires is that as sales tax increase, the county needs to go spend that money on new projects, and then property taxes are supposedly decreased in effect. That's an intervening step that makes it indirect, not direct. Now, I agree with Your Honor that there is more than one step from the collection of sales tax.
It can never be direct.
Well,
if there's nothing that intervenes, in how you're defining it, it can never be direct, because the only direct way would be to cut a check to the taxpayers.
I think what the statute assumes is that the baseline would be the fewest number of steps possible.
Okay, so it's not no steps, it's the fewest number of steps? That's what direct means?
Correct. There are some steps that are involved.
Show me a definition in a dictionary where direct equals fewest number of steps.
That means no intervening steps. So
well, wait a sec. You said fewest number, not no, because you recognize there can't be no intervening steps, right?
No, there are no intervening steps. There are still steps, but there cannot be an intervening step. An intervening step would be an unnecessary step.
Okay, so there can only be steps that you deem to be necessary, and that's what makes it direct.
Correct.
Okay, who decides that they're necessary?
It's just by a matter of logic.
Okay, so logic is what dictates how we know if it's direct.
Correct.
Okay.
Counsel, I wanted to make sure I understand your position here. And I want to take us back to when the statute was enacted back in 1985, I think, when there's no levy limits here. So let's assume for the moment you've got, you know, a $10 million property tax levy with associated spending, okay? And the county decides to enact a sales tax raising $3 million, just to keep the numbers simple so I can understand it. So one option, and let's say you do not increase their spending at all, okay? Keep it at a $10 million. So one way the county might itemize that in their budget would be, you know, $7 million on, let's say, split up between $5 million payroll, $2 million buildings, just to keep it simple, and then maybe $3 million spent on buildings now, that we would have spent otherwise on buildings before, or $5 million in payroll, $5 million in buildings, $3 million itemized offset for property taxes. Are both of those permissible under your reading of the statute? Could the county have done both of those, or is only one of those two allowed?
Your Honor, I want to make sure I'm understanding the hypothetical.
Yep.
Is the sales tax going toward new spending in that hypothetical?
So,
even without levy limits?
It depends, right? So one of the examples is $5 million coming out of the levy limit, $5 million buildings, $5 million payroll, okay? And so the budget, you know, the county's budget could say, we're going to have that $10 million come directly out of the property taxes, but we're going to itemize minus $3 million, so the only $7 million gets assessed out to taxpayers. Or they could design it in such a way, their budget, where it's functionally the same for the taxpayer, right? Where it's $5 million in payroll, and then only $2 million we're spending on, you know, buildings. So that's, yeah, are both of those, it seems to me that those are both ways of getting at the same outcome. I'm trying to understand, is it just a matter of accounting here or that you are asking, yeah, if you could help with that.
Sure. I think I understand the question. So it's not simply about the end result. We're talking about two different property taxpayer bases here. The taxpayers who pay the sales tax are different from the taxpayers who pay the property tax. Mm-hmm. So even if you end up with the same net reduction, the same bottom line property tax levy at the end, it matters who you're pulling that tax from. Additionally, requiring the county to devote sales tax revenue towards existing rather than new spending, even if that frees up money to be spent elsewhere, requires the county to explain in its public budgeting process what it's actually doing. So, yes, the county could either devote its sales tax revenue towards bottom-line levy, as long as there was enough existing spending to absorb all of the sales tax revenue, or could devote it towards individual items, as long as those items were existing. But what it couldn't do is devote them towards new or expanded county services.
And does it matter that does your position depend in any way on whether there are levy limits? I mean, back when this was passed, you know, counties could double their property tax levy, and so they can do a lot of the same things either way. In other words, you know, from a county's perspective, we got a variety of pools to draw from. They can design it in any particular way. Does it matter that there are levy limits for the purposes of how we read the statute when it was originally enacted, in terms of in some ways what the original meaning is understood when it was enacted?
I think the county had to the legislature had to take 77.70 into account when it was enacting levy limits, of course. So we're looking at the statute as it stands today, and certainly the levy limits matter for purposes of this.
But do they change the meaning of this? Do they change the meaning of the statute in any way, or do you think the statute's meant the same thing the whole time?
The statute's meant the same thing the whole time. I would note that in the realm of accounting, Your Honor, why do we pay accountants? We pay accountants because they can come up with many different ways to come to the same result, to accomplish certain goals. Money is fungible. The county, of course, wants this court to feel that it has to act as though it's the Department of Revenue and specify each permissible way that the sales tax can be used. There might be a spectrum of permissible approaches. All this court is asked to do in this case is rule whether the one approach that the county has chosen is illegal. And that makes this an easy case because their approach is at the far end of the spectrum. What they've done is, in their ordinance, explicitly devoted sales tax revenue to new projects in a way that would otherwise exceed the levy limits. So this is sort of the perfect first case on 77.70.
So you think they could spend, but only on existing projects?
Correct.
Okay.
I would like to switch, since we've talked about directly and reducing, to the 2017 amendment to 77.70, which confirms BCTA's reading of the statute. Now, in that amendment, what the legislature did was create an exception to the statutory restriction in 77.70. It said that certain bonds could be funded with sales tax revenue. Now, under the county's interpretation, that exception would not have been necessary because paying for bonds with sales tax revenue avoids the need to pay for them with property taxes. What the county's interpretation does is renders the 2017 exception meaningless. And, of course, courts do not read statutes in that manner. So the legislature's 2017 change supports BCTA's position. Further, the county's interpretation does not account for the legislative history that comes into play in this case. The Assembly amended the language when it created the modern sales tax statute to switch from the vaguer phrase, property tax relief, to the stricter phrase, direct property tax reduction. Why would that tightening of language be needed if the legislature intended to permit essentially an unrestricted sales tax? The county doesn't have an answer to that question. Nor does the county have an answer to Senator Russ Feingold's stated view, and Senator Feingold being the person who, the legislator who suggested adding a restriction to the sales tax statute, that the property tax burden was the greatest tax challenge facing the state, that the sales tax was inequitable, and therefore that sales tax revenue should go directly toward lowering property tax bills. That's what he said.
But the sales tax, it's a different group of people than the property tax does. Probably everybody is included in, I guess, the group of the sales tax, but there are many people that don't own property, so they don't pay property taxes. So they have two different foundations, don't they?
Precisely, Your Honor. And what the legislature sought to do was to reduce the tax burden on county residents, benefit county residents, by drawing sales tax revenue from a different tax base. It did not, as the legislative history and the text of the statute show, seek to somehow solve a property tax burden by simply adding another tax. What it sought to do was offset two different tax bases against each other so that, for example, if tourism goes up in a county, those county residents see real direct property tax reduction in their property tax bills.
Council, I want you to address the one of the, I guess, textual challenges that I'm having here is some of the purpose language in the statute. And the statute says, state your purpose. And I know the statute before this restriction came said, state your purpose. And, but it says, state your purpose, and then says, your purpose, in reference to section, and your purpose needs to be, you know, the language here, you know, for the purpose of directly reducing. It seems odd to me that if there was a particular mechanism that was being put in place, that you would need any of that purpose language at all. You would just say you can enact a sales tax, and that sales tax needs to count as sort of a, you know, one-for-one reduction. It would be odd to require an ordinance to specify something if it was simply a matter of mechanism, right? And the county argues that this is really an aim, a goal, that's another synonym for purpose, and gives some discretion to counties in terms of how they make those decisions. How would you respond to the argument?
So I would note that the county's position is internally inconsistent, because even the attorney general, on whose opinion the county relies, thought that 77.70 imposed a restriction on the use of funds. Even the attorney general pointed out this is very easily accomplished. You apply the sales tax to the bottom line property tax levy, or you apply it to individual items. So this is sort of an alternate argument that's made by the county. But to address it more directly, courts don't read statutes to be meaningless. And there's nothing accomplished by a simple requirement that a purpose be stated. I think it's difficult, as Your Honor noted, the original version of the statute simply called for a purpose. So it's difficult to read into the fact that the legislature was building on that pre-existing foundation. If they had been working from scratch, they might have taken a different approach. But when this was amended in the Assembly, to the legislature, it might have seemed the most straightforward way. In the past, we've stated, we've required you to say your purpose. Now we're telling you, this is the purpose that you can use it for and nothing more. And legislatures when they impose a purpose, they're requiring that purpose be accomplished. In the realm of law, legislators' desires are not, as this court knows, are not particularly relevant. The other problem with that reading is, as we noted in our brief, it's a hyperliteral reading. It requires the court to parse the individual words very strictly at the expense of the whole phrase. And if this court begins interpreting statutes in that manner, it makes it very difficult for the legislature to get anything done. Lawyers are great hair splitters, and what the court is creating is this incentive for litigants to say, well, it said impose for the purpose, but if you really, really, you know, there's a way to read this where, you know, no purpose is accomplished. I don't think that's a very good path to be going down.
Maybe. I mean, I agree in some respects, but, I mean, we also need to take all the words of the statute seriously. So, I mean, if you substitute the word purpose for the word like aim, right, you know, you need to have the aim of directly reducing property taxes. It still seems an odd way to phrase something that has no discretion built into it whatsoever. Why would you require an ordinance to say, hey, by the way, say what you're going to do with this, and the purpose of this is automatically predetermined for you anyway, then those words are sort of extraneous. They don't do anything in the statute. They mean nothing, too. And you know, I guess the other piece I would add to that is sometimes, you know, legislatures pass all sorts of things that accomplish some things, but maybe not as much as they wanted, or accomplish some things, but don't have external controls or accountability mechanisms. I understand your argument is this is that. I'm trying to reason through what the statute actually means as written.
I would submit, Your Honor, that's a fair point. I would submit that if the legislature were trying to accomplish what I think the approach that you're outlining, they wouldn't have separated it out. They would have said, we want the ordinance to state X, and that would have been it. Instead, what they said, we want it to state its purpose. And by the way, counties can only be imposed for the purpose of directly reducing the property tax levy. So it shifted it. It's not all about what appears in the ordinance. It's also about what the tax is doing.
Counsel, if you have to do a dollar-for-dollar reduction of property tax by what you collect on a sales and use tax, doesn't that make the sales and use tax even more regressive, because poor people that pay sales and use tax will be reducing the property taxes of rich people who own property? Should I be concerned about this?
I think it is a concern, but it would be a concern for the legislature. Its concern when enacting the sales tax was the property tax burden. It viewed the property tax burden as more significant than the sales tax. Again, Senator Feingold's statement, he did view the sales tax as inequitable, but he also said that the property tax was a greater burden. It was the greatest burden facing the state. So in 2021, reasonable people may be able to disagree as a matter of policy on how the statute should operate, but we have to keep in mind that in the 80s, as we point out, property tax is what was on everybody's mind, and this was designed to reduce that, even if there might be an incidental burdens on visitors to a county.
Well, you know, you can reduce the property tax by paying for things that the property tax could have paid for with a new tax, right?
You could not use the sales tax simply to fund new projects.
Where does it say that in the statute?
It says that the property tax levy must be directly reduced.
Well, but, you know, if you have an item as then Attorney General Doyle, later Governor Doyle, points out, that is substantively an item that property tax could be used to fund, but you fund it with the sales and use tax, but the ordinance has determined that this is needed for the community. Under your circumstances, you could never do it then.
In this case, such an increase, the hypothetical increase you're discussing, would have been illegal. It would have been illegal because it would have exceeded levy limits.
Well, it depends on how far you go on that. I mean, the levy limits are the borrowing, right? But if you're paying for things with the sales and use tax, why are you borrowing to pay for them? Why not pay for them as the revenue comes in? And then you don't get stuck with the levy limits, do you?
So borrowing is exempt from levy limits. But borrowing requires a 3/4 vote of the county board,
okay,
or a referendum among the taxpayers.
Okay.
So what the county is saying is, we'll assume the voters approve this.
Okay.
We won't bring it to them for their approval. We'll assume they approve it.
Right.
We'll assume they would have authorized $147 million in new borrowing on these projects.
Okay.
And therefore, we've avoided the increase that otherwise would have occurred had they approved it, had we then raised property taxes to pay back the borrowing. That's the avoidance of an increase. It's not direct, and it evades levy limits.
Well, it depends a little bit on, of course, how you interpret the statute, which is why we're all here today, right? Thank you.
Mr. Lococo, in looking at 77.70 in context, of course, the two statutes that come right after are 77705, which talks about the baseball park district, which was the funding for Miller Park, is now American Family Field. And 77.706, which talks about Ramble. And both of those have language in them that is far more specific as far as a dollar-for-dollar offset. And I don't read that in 77.70. So we know the legislator can use the language because they did in the two provisions directly after 77.70. Why shouldn't I be concerned about that?
So those statutes are referring back to appropriation accounts in WSSTAT 20.566. And those appropriation accounts appropriate money to the Department of Revenue for the administration of the taxes. And if Your Honor will look at the administration statute 77.76, you'll see that clearly. Money is given to DOR to administer each of these three taxes. Now, if you look at the relevant appropriation accounts, the sales tax appropriation account, once the DOR has finished administrating the tax in a particular year, that money lapses to the general fund. Only the stadium taxes have the money go back into the appropriation accounts for the counties, and that's what you're seeing in the stadium taxes.
So I understand what you're saying, and I feel like it goes back to what one of my colleagues, and now I apologize, I can't remember who it was. I think it might have been Justice Hagedorn, but I apologize if it wasn't to whoever said this earlier. But the conversation about the statutes telling us how and not what. So you're telling me how. And what I'm saying is that what I'm reading in 77.705 and what I'm reading in 77.706 is what. And the what is the dollar for dollar. So bring me back to 7.70 where I don't see that same language and help me understand it in the context of the what, not the how.
Understood. I have two answers to that. Number one, the 77.70, although it doesn't deal with that same stream of revenue, is more broadly worded, not less. So the imposition of the tax, when a phrase is used, you may impose the tax for this purpose, that includes the collection and expenditure of funds. Secondly, the difference that we're discussing is not maintained even within the stadium tax statutes. If Your Honor will examine those appropriation accounts, 20.566, you'll see that even the stadium taxes talk about the purpose for which the stadium taxes may be used. So if we begin reading these statutes, I'm sorry, may I finish? My time is on.
You may finish.
If we begin reading the statutes to not require any practical effect, you're going to start interfering with the operation not only of 77.70, but also the stadium taxes.
Thank you. Attorney Phillips?
Good morning again, Justices, and may it please this Court. Brown County is asking this Court to apply the plain meaning of Section 77.70 of the statutes that's been consistently applied for over three decades now, that the Attorney General has issued a formal opinion on. The legislature has acquiesced in that opinion, and this particular statute is relied upon by 68 different counties in this state through their budgeting and finance process. If we look at what 77.70 requires, to Justice Hagedorn's earlier comment, it requires that an ordinance be adopted by a county imposing the tax, and the revenue from that tax may be used for the purpose, the ordinance is enacted for the purpose of directly reducing the property tax levy. That is a far cry from the dollar-for-dollar offset that my opponents are arguing ought to be read into Section 77.70 today. Earlier, counsel had a discussion about the remedy phase of this case, and we agree that it's not appropriate for this Court to necessarily fashion remedy without remand to the Circuit Court. But I think a consideration of remedy here is quite important, because we don't know exactly how this dollar-for-dollar offset is supposed to occur. If we look at the county...
Also, before we get to talking about the remedy, I'm struggling to understand how the property tax levy is reduced at all, because as implemented by the county in this case and by other counties, there's no reduction of the property tax levy. All of the sales tax is used to fund new projects. So how is it that the property tax levy is reduced at all? I understand the argument, well, we would have borrowed in order to fund all of these projects but for the sales and use tax, but that's sort of a hypothetical, right? We don't know politically whether that ability to borrow would have actually come to fruition.
If we look at the discretion that is given the Brown County Board, the board is given that ability to make a determination at the local level as to how that reduction in the levy is going to occur. And so, again, following the logic of indicating that you cannot use this money for new projects, so to speak, and debt levy is accepted from the levy limits. So if Brown County were to issue debt to pay for those 9 new delineated projects in the ordinance, the money for debt service to pay on that debt would have been exempted from the levy limit. So that's clear. And so does the statute need to be read in a way such that Brown County has to authorize the borrowing, which involves hiring finance professionals, involves a lengthy process and a lot of money be spent on bond counsel and others in order to authorize that debt and then say, never mind, we're going to use sales and use tax proceeds? That seems like tremendous inefficiency. It seems like...
But doesn't the legislature have the prerogative to enact laws that we might consider from a policy perspective to be inefficient? Again, we might disagree with the legislature's choices, but aren't those the legislature's choices in the first place?
I agree. The legislature does have that prerogative. And had the legislature written 77.70 the way that it wrote 77.705 and 77.706, I don't think we would be here, because there is a command within those two statutes that the revenue from the taxes imposed in those statutes must be spent in a specific manner. There is no such prescription contained within 77.70 of the statute.
But the prescription is that the property tax levy must be directly reduced. Did the levy go up or down after the enactment of the sales and use tax?
The levy actually went up in Brown County after the enactment of the tax, but you have to remember that there are factors in play other than simply the collection of sales and use tax revenues. By way of example, you'll note also in the Brown County ordinance that they froze all of their borrowing for the 6-year lifespan of that ordinance. As debt comes off the books in Brown County, that's going to reduce the levy. So over the 6-year term of the ordinance, the Brown County property tax levy is indeed reduced because the debt levy is coming. And remember, debt levy is not subject to the levy limits contained in 66.0602 of the statutes.
Do you think the statute has the intention of imposing a level of discipline on local government such that it cannot impose the sales and use tax unless it is going to reduce property tax?
As a general concept, I would agree with that proposition. I think there are any number of statutes on the books that constrain local government, some more prescriptive.
So isn't there some logic to the notion that if you're using a tax toward an existing project, that could function as essentially a reduction or have direct relation to property sales tax? Whereas if you're using sales and use tax for a future project, the relation is so uncertain and unclear that it would be impossible, really, to ascertain if, when, or how, and to what extent someday that future project might impact a possible future tax, such that, really, the government could at any time just say, hey, we think this might someday have an effect on your property taxes and be a good effect, so just trust us. It's going to be good, maybe, somewhere down the line. Is that really what they intended to say with the words of the statute?
I think that revenues from a sales and use tax are necessarily going to reduce the property tax burden. And there are two different moments in time why I'm saying that. There's pre-levy limit and there's post-levy limit. Pre-levy limit, there was no constraint on a county board levying a property tax to support county government operations and infrastructure. No limit whatsoever. In that circumstance, is it enough for a county to say next year we're going to build a new courthouse and we're going to pay for that courthouse through the imposition of a sales and use tax, borrowing those sums and putting that on the back of the property taxpayers within the county? I think county boards had the discretion at that time to determine what the best and most reasonable and fiscally responsible manner to pay for that project would be. They could decide we're not going to pay interest, we're not going to pay finance professionals, we're not going to pay bond counsel, we're going to use sales and use tax proceeds for these projects. I don't think it's ever appropriate for a county board to levy a sales and use tax to build a contingency fund or a rainy day fund. I don't think a county can do that. So when we say projects in the future, there has to be something through the budgetary process that the sales and use tax revenues are going toward that would otherwise be funded by the property tax levy.
Well, so, Council, let me follow up on that. Why not? I mean, the hard part of your argument, I think, is that counties could basically get around the requirements altogether. Why couldn't a county come and say, you know what, we foresee an economic downturn coming, and in order to preserve, you know, and protect our taxpayers, we're going to enact this and create a rainy day fund for it? Why couldn't they do that, particularly if that discretion is given to them?
That's a good question. It was probably, and again, I'm sorry, about 15 years ago, there was an attorney general opinion on a county's ability to create a rainy day fund, and the constraints on that under the public purpose doctrine. We're going beyond the argument here, but there are constraints on a county's ability to essentially tax the populace and use that money to create a rainy day fund.
Well, we can find something else then, but maybe there's other limitations on it. But the main point, and I'd like to hear your answer to the Chief Justice's, you know, point, is that in effect, this reading poses very little, if no, practical restraints at all on counties. And that's potentially troubling if the statute doesn't do much at all or could be avoided by a creative government, and creative governments exist.
Point well taken, and I appreciate you recognizing the difficulty of the argument. That makes me feel like I'm doing my job, Justice. But the point is when we look at how county government operates, it is governed by Chapter 59 of the statutes, and it's constrained by things like the public purpose doctrine. It cannot just spend money unless it's authorized to spend that money. And as we know, counties, for the most part, deliver state-mandated services. And so it levies taxes in order to support those state-mandated services and perform other functions of county government, primarily contained within Chapter 59 of the statutes. And so when we speak to an out-of-control county government, they don't have the ability, in my estimation, to simply open the checkbook and fund whatever the county government wants to fund. And let's not forget that the board they're accountable to the electorate. There's a legislative process that goes with this. The county board has been entirely transparent in Brown County. The county executive has been entirely transparent in the county about exactly how these sales and use tax proceeds are going to be spent and the purpose that is achieved by spending them in the way that they're spent.
I don't doubt that. That's not where I'm just trying to work with the words of the statute. I'm not saying anyone has any bad motives or intentions here, but what would ever stop? What would be the taxpayer's stop to county government putting an ordinance in place that seems to conflict with the limits of a statute and then taxing the taxpayers, claiming that someday you will have a future theoretical benefit to your property tax? Are there any limits?
I think there are, and forgive me that I don't have the exact citation to this, but there is regularity in statutory regulation over the budget process. We have, for example, 66.0602 dealing with levy statutes in place that constrain county governments in terms of that spending. So in a hypothetical situation, to say that we are going to set these revenues aside for some future undefined project, I think that that's a significant problem for a county, but that's not what we're dealing with here.
So what's the direct benefit to the property tax? What's the property tax relief here?
The property taxpayers in Brown County are benefiting from not paying $42 million in interest that they otherwise would have had they borrowed that money. The property taxpayers, as a result of the freeze on borrowing that's contained within the ordinance, are receiving millions of dollars worth of benefit as debt comes off the books in Brown County. There is a direct reduction in the property tax levy as a result of the imposition of sales and use tax in this case.
So how many dollars did they save on the property tax bills?
Each individual property, I don't know the exact. We cited in our brief what that exact number is, and I don't want to be misquoted, but I believe it was in the neighborhood of over the life of the ordinance, it would be a 140-some-odd dollar reduction, if I recall correctly.
But that argument is really that the property tax levy, because of how the sales and use tax was applied, it actually would have been higher than it would otherwise have been but for the sales tax. That's not reducing the property tax levy. That's just making sure it doesn't go up higher. There's a difference there. I'm not sure how your argument gives any statutory effect to directly reducing the property tax levy when you concede it went up. Your opponent on the other side says it rose by about 5% the next year. So there was no reduction in the property tax levy because of the sales and use tax. Your argument can only go so far as to say that the property tax levy is not as high as it would have been. In other words, it made the increase less. But that's not a direct reduction, is it?
Our argument is that the statute does not require a dollar-for-dollar offset in the sense that the taxpayers are arguing in this instance. Our argument is that the tax is imposed for the purpose of directly reducing the property tax levy, and that purpose can be reflected in a dollar-for-dollar offset, avoidance of a debt obligation, or some other operational need that is going to require the county to spend more money next year than it did this year. There are a variety of ways that a county can illustrate a direct reduction in the property tax levy, and dollar-for-dollar offset year-to-year is not the only way. And frankly, we find that incredibly problematic to have the application of a dollar-for-dollar offset every year because there is no mechanism in statute how you estimate the sales tax proceeds. Do you use the prior year? How do you set your levy? Because once that levy is set, it's there for the entire year. You don't have an opportunity to amend your levy. And then next year, 66.0602 of the statute says the starting point for your levy limit calculation is based upon last year's property tax levy. So it's a double whammy if your estimate ends up being incorrect. And if your estimate is too low, does that mean you're opening yourself up to a lawsuit from a taxpayer group suggesting that your estimating was off? There's no mechanism in statute to provide any guidance as to how this offset would occur. There's no command to the Department of Revenue to have them adopt administrative regulation to tell us how that offset occurs. And frankly, it's not there because it was never intended. That's not what happened in 77.7. It did happen in 705 and 706. And when
the statute to me looks like the legislature said, government, you have to impose discipline on yourself when you're going to tax people, and here's how this has to work if you're going to do it through sales and use tax. It has to be a direct benefit to property taxes. Your argument, you might be right. This might really be good for the taxpayers. It might really ultimately be good for property owners. But how does your argument comport with the language of the statute? It sounds to me a lot like, and you might be right, but we know what's good for you, so just trust us, we're the government.
I don't know if I go that far in terms of reading the statute, just trust us. I do think, however, that the prescription in 77.70 does provide discretion to local elected officials as to how they are going to determine the best way to directly reduce the property tax levy. Otherwise, the legislature would have prescribed with specificity how the revenues from that tax need to be spent, just like they did in the other statutes. The legislature had opportunity four different times after the Attorney General's opinion in 1998 to amend 77.70 and address this. It did not. It touched that statute four times. The legislature in 2006, with the imposition of levy limits in 66.0602, was well aware of the 1998 Attorney General opinion, and in the 20-plus times since 2006 that the legislature has amended 660602, it has not provided any sort of direction on the dollar-for-dollar offset or reduction that my opponents are suggesting should be read into this statute.
You said something about the statute doesn't specify how the revenue should be spent. And my response would be, well, that's because the statute is written so that the sales and use taxes aren't spent for anything. It's very specific for directly reducing the property tax levy. That doesn't contemplate any spending whatsoever. And I think that's why we get into these questions and conversations about the specificity of how it should be spent. There's not supposed to be new spending with this statute, under this statute. It's to reduce property taxes. That's it.
My response to that is that if we look year over year, a county budget is not static. And so we have net new construction, for example, that comes into play. Net new construction is an addition to the levy limits under 660602. The levy is going to go up if the county board decides they want to increase the levy. The statutes allow them to increase the levy.
Right, so, and then there would be more revenue, and that revenue from additional construction, new taxpayers, additional taxpayers, that's revenue that the county could then spend on its various projects. But this statute talks about, again, directly reducing the property tax levy. That's what the sales and use tax can be spent on, not new spending, not additional spending. Again, I go back to my question about how I don't read the statute as the license for the counties to increase their spending by telling the taxpayers, oh, this is great. We were going to have to increase your levy so we can spend all of this money, and now you're going to avoid an increase because of the sales and use tax. That's not reducing their property tax levy. That's avoiding an increase in it.
And my response is that it depends on how you view a reduction, because year over year, county budgets are not static. And year over year, counties decide whether they're going to borrow funds for capital projects under Chapter 67. So if year over year they decide that they are going to have a courthouse, a jail, highways repaired, if they're going to do these sorts of things, the statute does not dictate that the county board cannot impose a sales and use tax to pay as they go as opposed to borrowing. And from our perspective, it requires the court to read a lot into this statute for that type of prescription to apply.
Counsel, it's a tough case. I think there's some good textual arguments on both sides here. The toughest part about your argument, just to hit on it, and hear your best answer here, is it doesn't actually matter, I think, if I'm understanding your argument correctly, whether the county even reduces property taxes at all. That they can, because they're given so much discretion under the statute, it doesn't actually matter whether there is a reduction here or whether they could show a reduction, that so long as they, in their exercise of discretion, determine this will benefit taxpayers, it doesn't matter whether it actually does, it doesn't matter whether they're shooting straight with the people or not when they do that, which in effect makes this statute window dressing more than any kind of limitation practically. And maybe that's the answer. The answer is if it gives vast discretion to the county to do something, and it says you're supposed to do it for this, and whether they do it or not is for political accountability or some other such purpose. But in effect, I think the hardest part of your position is, at least for me, is that this statute doesn't end up doing much at all because it can always be gotten around.
I would prefer to call it something other than window dressing personally, but I understand your point. And I do think that the statute does provide some guardrails in terms of the imposition of that tax and the county being required to show that it directly reduced the property tax levy. But the way that that happens varies under the circumstances, and there are 68 different ways in this state that counties are doing it. In Brown County's circumstance, they adopted an ordinance that had a six-year window. And in that window, Brown County said, we're not going to issue new debt. What that means is that as older debt comes off the books, it is necessarily going to reduce the property tax levy in Brown County. In addition, As a county board, we are deciding we're not going to borrow to fund these new capital projects. That is going to produce savings for the property taxpayers in Brown County.
What's your definition of direct? Some of my colleagues were interested in what Mr. Lococo had to say. I think you deserve the chance to define that as well.
The term directly has to be viewed in context of the entire sentence where it sits. And so the sentence reads that the taxes may be imposed only for the purpose of directly reducing the property tax levy. In that circumstance, we're talking about directly in relation to the act of imposition. And the county board is the entity that authorizes the imposition of that tax. And so the county board is the entity vested with the discretion to determine how the direct reduction is going to occur. Otherwise, again, had the legislature wanted it differently, it would have specifically stated in statute, here's how you as a county are going to spend these revenues, just as happened in 77.705 and 706. Different words mean different things.
Well, we have to, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. So your definition of direct is?
The definition of directly means, and I will agree with counsel on the definition of direct that's contained within the dictionary. I have no quarrel with that. My issue is that when you have the direct reduction, that it has to be viewed in the context of the time of imposition of the tax, because that's what the statute requires.
So to the extent some of my colleagues might have been wondering if direct means without any intervening steps, or whether there need to be some intervening steps, or how many intervening steps, what do you think of that? Under your logic, there have to be other steps because the county board gets to decide, right?
Under my logic, one of the paths that a county board could take is to estimate sales and use tax proceeds and deduct dollar for dollar from the property tax levy. A county certainly could do that. And I think in the estimation of my opponents, that's exactly what the statute requires. But that's our position, Brown County's position, is that's not what the statute requires. You're reading things into the statute that don't exist. That's but one alternative that's available to a county board. And we leave a significant amount of discretion to the county board to determine, local level, with elected officials accountable to the public, closest to the public, exactly how that direction reduction is going to occur. And if there is an issue that somebody has with how the county board is appropriating this tax and using the revenues from that tax, the remedy is at the ballot box, because there's no mechanism in statute that suggests how we conduct this calculation for the offset.
But the remedy is also in court if the county is not following the text of the statute, right? I mean, you can't just leave all statutory interpretation to the counties and then, well, if the voters don't like it, they'll kick them out.
I agree. And here's the challenge with this statute, is that there is no mechanism to provide any guidance to any county anywhere about this, how this offset occurs. If a county estimates sales and use tax proceeds, and the estimate is 20% off, underestimates by 20%, in an effort to get around this requirement that we do a dollar-for-dollar offset, does a taxpayer have a claim to say that the county estimated in some wrong fashion? I don't know the answer to that. And the reason I don't know the answer to that is the statute doesn't require it. And the statute doesn't give the Department of Revenue any authority to adopt administrative regulation to advise counties how this calculation is performed. We saw wide variation in sales and use tax receipts last year in the midst of the pandemic. We had some counties like Sauk County, where Wisconsin Dells is, see a 50% reduction in their sales and use tax receipts. We saw other counties that weren't high tourist population see a significant increase in their sales and use tax proceeds. So how does the statute require the county that saw the increase apply those increased revenues for next year's levy? The statute doesn't tell us. Again, it's left to the county board on how we're going to fund our operations, and we're going to provide infrastructure to take care of the citizens that rely upon us each and every day and utilize the funds available to us through property tax levy and sales and use tax proceeds.
How do you respond to the arguments on the other side where they gave many examples in the briefing of counties who implemented this reduction in the property tax levy based on the sales and use taxes in the past?
My response is that counties are free to do that as the taxpayers suggest they should. They
but you're saying that you were saying that it's really impossible to do that. The Department of Revenue has no way of doing that. The counties don't, but they've done it. We've got multiple examples in the past of them actually doing this. So, again, we're not really supposed to be looking at consequences or the difficulties of applying a statute the legislature might have written. So, I mean, that really doesn't matter, does it?
In our briefing, we pointed out that it has not happened dollar for dollar. Ordinance language is one thing. Actual application to a county budget and tax receipts is quite another. And so we pointed out in our briefing that, yeah, the ordinance might say this, but the levies were not reduced dollar for dollar based upon the receipt of those proceeds year over year. And that's with good reason. That's not a knock on those counties. It's not suggesting that they even violated their own ordinance. But what we are suggesting is that the county process associated with budgeting and levying taxes is not static. It's fungible. And we have all sorts of exceptions under 606602 and other statutes, relief from the levy limits, and things that counties may want to levy for, the primary one being debt service. And so if a county decides to undertake borrowing, it is going to issue debt for that, and the debt service is added to the levy limit calculation. And so if a county decides that it wants to go through the process of issuing debt, incur that cost, and then decide to impose a tax in order to pay that off, a county can do that, but we're suggesting it's not required under the statute. So there is no uniformity among the 68 counties that have imposed this tax. And the reason that there's no uniformity is that it has never been required, and there's no mechanism in statute or administrative regulation suggesting how that entire calculation approach needs to happen.
Council, I'm going to focus on the definition of directly, and it's been discussed earlier. And my concern is that I think we really have to look at the statute in context, because picking a definition of directly can be outcome determinative. Black's Law Dictionary defines it as in a straightforward manner. Merriam-Webster seems to have conflicting definitions. Number one, without delay, and then also, or in a little while, which suggests to me some delay. Do those definitions, how do those definitions fit in, if at all, with your argument regarding how we decide which of these gem definitions that we should select?
And our argument is that no matter what gem definition is accepted by this court, that you still look at the definition in the context of the sentence in which it...
And that's with 705 and 706.
That's correct. And plus, it's the act of imposition is the point in time where we adjudicate whether the direct reduction is occurring. And at the time of imposition, when a county adopts an ordinance, is it doing so for the purpose of directly reducing the property tax levy? That's the question for this court, and I'm out of time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Lococo.
If I could, I'd just like to make three brief points. We heard a lot about other safeguards, not in 77.70 or in the briefing for that matter, like regularity and public purpose. But I think I heard and the court heard the county's view of this statute. Counsel for the county said that the sales tax is necessarily going to reduce the property tax levy. If a sales tax is enacted, it's necessarily going to do so. That reads any meaning completely out of the statute. It doesn't explain the 2017 amendment. It doesn't explain the legislative history. It doesn't explain why even Attorney General Jim Doyle, whose opinion my clients are not fans of, thought that the sales tax statute imposed a real restriction. The benefit, point two would be that the benefit that the county is citing, this supposed reduction on property tax bill, is entirely a numerical version of its argument that it's avoiding borrowing. It could have enacted a borrowing freeze without the sales tax. It could have accomplished the exact same result. What it is unable to show is that the borrowing would have actually been approved by county taxpayers. We hear a lot about accountability. If the county wanted accountability, it could have asked for approval on these projects from its citizens, but it didn't do so. Finally, I just want to push back on the idea that borrowing was the only alternative here. Under the levy limit statute, a county can exceed its levy limits if it goes to its voters. That's yet another avenue for accountability that was avoided here. So unless there are other questions, in conclusion, Brown County's sales tax does not directly reduce property tax levy, and because of levy limits, it does not even avoid a hypothetical increase. This court should declare the sales tax unlawful, reverse the circuit court, and remand for further proceedings. Thank you.
Any questions? All right. Thank you. Thank you for your argument. Thank you for your good briefing. And thank you to the students for being here today. It was nice to have you join us. We are going to take a brief break and come back out for the second case. And I think there might be an... that as well. All right, thank you.